If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
This case doesn't tiptoe. It kicks the door in. Aaron Spencer isn't a name you forget once you hear what happened. And this is a prime example of our system in a very gray area. But one which one needs to look at and go and say, okay, yeah, there should not be charges against this man. Who is Aaron Spencer, you ask? Well, be prepared to be enraged at the charges against him. Because he's a good guy. He's a father, a military vet. And as of right now, he's also facing second-degree murder charges for shooting and killing the man accused of sexually abusing his teenage daughter. The same man who was out on bond, who was allegedly still pursuing that same child, who was found in the middle of the night with her, this man's child, in his truck. Let that sink in. I'm surprised they didn't find this man in pieces, spread amongst wildlife, slowly eating the corpse of the predator. Because that's how it would have ended if it happened to my child. So let all that sink in. What happened that night on the highway in rural Arkansas feels like a movie scene. Except no screenwriter dared touch it. Spencer finds a truck. The truck of the predator who's already gone after your daughter and has been charged for it. But he's out on bond. Spencer realizes his daughter's not in her room. In the middle of the night, gets in his truck, starts driving, finds the truck of said predator. His daughter's in it. The guy won't stop. Mm-mm. He's not just sitting there on the side of the road or in some parking spot or in his driveway or in the woods. He's on the road. He's moving. Spencer rams him off the road, gets out, gun drawn. And when things escalate, he fires a lot and then calls 911. Well, someone abducted your daughter. You literally had to ram them off the road because you're the only one there. The police, they're not showing up. And the system already failed you by saying, guess what? He can get out on a very cheap bond. Never mind the 47 charges of fucking with a kid. Yeah, you got a weapon on you? It's going to discharge into that man. Garen effing Teed. How would it not? It would be difficult not for the bullets of a weapon to find the flesh and the organs and the brain of the man who just abducted your daughter. When you actively catch him trying to abduct her. And now the state of Arkansas says, we think we should charge you. You killed him. Yes, of course they did. Of course he did. Should be getting a Medal of Honor. Free blizzards for life at the local DQ. We're not talking about some backwoods mystery here. We know who did what. This isn't about finding a killer. It's about figuring out whether the killing was legal or moral or necessary or all three. And I think he checks the boxes. 47 counts against a minor, and he abducts her while out on bond. Yeah, guess what? The bullet gets to go to your brain. And here's the tension. You've got a father acting out of raw instinct, a system that lets a predator out on the streets and the public ready to riot if this guy sees a prison cell. So why charge him? Why second-degree murder? Why now? That's what we're digging into today, because behind every headline about hero dad kills accused abuser is a DA making decisions under pressure and a legal standard that doesn't always care how justified something is. Joining me is defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis. He knows exactly what goes through a prosecutor's mind when a case like this lands on your desk and the public's already lit the torches. So let's start right there. Eric, take us inside that charging decision. You were the prosecutor reviewing this file, knowing the optics, knowing the outrage. What's the callus? What move forward or why move forward with all the charges?
Yeah, Tony, I mean, one of the central questions for me is there ever a time to kill? You know, that's an issue that's been debated throughout millennia. And here we have a really poignant sort of situation where the prosecutor has to look at this and say, hey, do I have probable cause for a crime? Are there any potential defenses that could apply? And is it in the best interests of justice to move forward with this case? These prosecutors ultimately determined that, yes, it was for them.
Do they really not have a choice? I mean, I know it's easy to armchair quarterback this one on the sideline and go, yeah, he was completely justified in this. But when someone gets shot, I mean, do you always have to charge it? I mean, or is this like we have to do this no matter what, and then maybe the legal system will kind of work this out before it gets to trial? Or was this, I don't know. I mean, did it have to be charged at the end of the day? In Arkansas, I guess it comes down to what the legal threshold is for a justified shooting.
Right. It absolutely does. It also comes down to sort of the policy considerations within that prosecutor's office. And on top of that, they've got to look at, hey, is there any legitimate legal defense here? How strong is that defense? Do I still have a reasonable likelihood of conviction if I bring this case to trial? And so a lot of difficult questions with which the prosecutors were surely wrestling. There is usually not some sort of legal obligation to charge a case simply because there's enough evidence. But the modern trend, especially in situations like this, is if there's a shooting, somebody dies, there's no legal defense that is overwhelming. We're going to charge it. We're going to let a jury decide. And I imagine that's a part of the calculus the prosecutors were considering.
But isn't what happened in this case a strong enough legal defense? I mean, the guy has already been charged with SAing the daughter 43 times. He gets out on bond for whatever reason that the system allowed to happen, not the family, the system, the court system screwing up so much that this guy is not a danger to the public. So let's let him out. He shows up at the guy's house in the middle of the night, abducts his daughter. Dad gets up, realizes it happens, chases him down, gets behind him in the truck. The guy's not pulling over. He has to ram him off the road. Gets out of the vehicle, has a weapon, thank God, because he doesn't know what he's walking into with his daughter that's being abducted in real time. And yeah, confronts the guy. The guy kind of comes at him. He kills him. How is that not justified? I can't think of a more justifiable situation in life than that one right there, where killing someone is 1,000% justified. But not only that, you should be getting like unlimited chicken wings at Applebee's for the rest of your life. It should just be like, guess what? This comes along with it, sir. You get unlimited boneless buffalo wings because you did this. That's just part of what we have in our community bylaws. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like it should be. I don't know. This seems, not that complicated.
one important question you raised, Tony, is you know, could a jury nullify this? Because when there are a layperson hears a story like this, I think the vast majority of them are like, hey, that guy needed some killing, and that this was justified, certainly morally justified. And so the prosecutors really have to consider that, because even if there is not some ironclad legal defense, and there are some potential legal defenses to this, but even if there weren't, is a jury going to look at this and say, hey, at the end of the day, I would have done the same thing? I'm not going to brand this guy with a scarlet letter of a permanent murder conviction and condemn him for the rest of his life for what amounts to protecting his own daughter.
Because, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what the state of Arkansas has to be looking at here. Excuse me, this guy's daughter assaulted, abducted, and now the state's solution is, well, let's get the big, you know, rock out of your life, the guy who's protecting you, the guy that can help guide you through this and give you what you need as best as one possibly can as you go through the rest of your formative years. Let's take him away too, because he finally killed the guy and he protected you from the guy that us, the state, failed to protect you from. Let's take him away too. This seems like a prosecutor's office that, I don't know, are they, I don't know what the hell they're doing. This just seems very, very bizarre. What do we know about the prosecutor's office? Are they trying to make some sort of statement? Are they trying to be, you know, uberly liberal on the laws of the land here? Or what the hell is going on? Again, this just doesn't seem very right.
Certainly optics are involved, PR is involved, potential civil liability is involved. One thing I've seen, Tony, is over the decades, you know, back in the day, prosecutors would sometimes make bold decisions not to charge cases for which there was evidence because it wasn't in the interest of justice. Prosecutors have that prosecutorial discretion. They could have exercised that in a different way here. What I've seen more recently is prosecutors instead kind of charging the case and thereby sort of punting this really difficult decision, saying, hey, we're not going to make the final call. We'll have a jury do it. And if he's not guilty, he's not guilty, instead of sort of taking the onus on themselves and saying, hey, I've got to make what I believe is the most just decision here prosecutorially. You know, in my personal opinion, that they didn't do that.
Is anyone going to, would anyone have objected if the prosecutor said, we're not going to charge this? I can't imagine there's going to be like picketing around the courthouse going, oh, give the predator a chance. I just don't know. I just don't see that unless this is just really a stupid move. I mean, everybody's human in this. And people don't like to walk back things that they've already done. I mean, they did walk back the charge initially. It was originally first degree murder, which is like, how? And now it's second degree. But you also have a gag order in this case. It's been a big, big piece, ultimately struck down. It took the Arkansas Supreme Court to strike it down. It wasn't that the judge said, well, that may be a bit much. The Supreme Court said, you got to back this up. From a prosecutor's view, what's the logic behind trying to silence both sides on this? And does it actually help the state in this? Does it help anybody in this? I mean, at the end of the day.
You know, I think there on that issue parallels between this case and the Koberger case, in that the prosecutors in that case were abiding by a very strict gag order. And some people say, hey, that was because they wanted to preserve the defendant's rights to a fair trial. They didn't want all this outside information in the public that potential jurors could hear and form a decision on. However, other people say that the gag order was actually protecting the prosecutor's office in Koberger from what some people believed, including one of the victim's families, was a mishandling of the case. And so, you know, are prosecutors now seeking gag orders so that they can avoid sort of public scrutiny in terms of how they're handling their own cases? I think it's an important question to ask.
So here we are, one father, one dead man, one community completely torn on what justice even means anymore. And after hearing that, it's not hard to walk away feeling like this case isn't just about Aaron Spencer. It's about how uncomfortable we are with what the law allows and what it doesn't. What Eric laid out is exactly what prosecutors get stuck in, these kind of moral quagmires, because at some point you're not just prosecuting a person, you're prosecuting a reaction, the father's gut instinct, a decision made in a matter of fear, rage, and pure protective adrenaline. And legally, that's a minefield. Morally, it can be messy depending how you look on it. Or it can be very, very clear-cut. The big takeaway here isn't just whether Spencer pulled the trigger, it's whether the law has any room to acknowledge what it feels like to be the last line of defense for your own kid. Whether our justice system can hold space for outrage and empathy without folding under it. And let's not forget the original crime here, the one that started all of this, was 43 charges of child sexual abuse. 43! That's a number one. That's the number no one seems to want to dwell on. But it's a backbone of this whole situation, because that's the system failure that opened the door to everything that followed. And if we're putting Spencer under the microscope, we sure as hell better be looking at how the courts let Fosger get close enough to that child again in the first place. I think we should be arresting one of those people for allowing that to happen, because had that not happened, you wouldn't have put this father in that position where he had to defend his child who was just abducted by the same person who already has the charges against him that the system let out. I say let the father go on a chase with whoever made that decision. One has a gun, the other doesn't. Spoiler alert, dad has the gun. If the DA, whoever released this person, or the judge who released this person and put this child in that situation gets away, great, you won the prize. If not, guess what? You get the same thing coming to you too. Because if you make that poor of a choice and you put the child in that much of danger for whatever dumb reason you have, well, guess what? Consequences need to start coming to you too. And we've all seen the defense break it down. And that's coming up in our next segment. We're going to flip the script and ask what happens when a jury hears this case, not through a legal lens, but through the eyes of a parent. What's the real shot at acquittal? What are the risks? What are the landmines? But for now, remember this. When justice feels delayed, people get desperate. And desperation doesn't always read well in a courtroom transcript. Tell me what your thoughts are in the comments section on YouTube. If you've not done so already, please do press subscribe on YouTube. All you have to do is search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You can search that on wherever you download podcasts as well and find the podcast version of our program. So you can listen wherever you go, on the go, at the beach, in the car, at work, whatever makes you feel good. A better variety of true crime for your workday. You know, all that stuff radio stations say. Today's best mix of true crime. Whatever. Anyway, press subscribe. We do appreciate your support. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.